block. Illinois plates, the paint salt-pocked and grimy. A man got out carrying a macrame shopping bag. 40s, thick mop of gray hair, matching beard. He wore a tweed jacket, pressed jeans, a blue work shirt, brown and tan wingtips. Standing near his driver's door, he pressed a finger to his chin as if considering options. I kept going, positioning myself so the badge was easy to spot. "Police?" he said. I stopped. He put his bag down. "If I'm correct, I've noticed another one of you guys looked like a weightlifter. I was coming home after a weekend away, early morning, saw him around the corner. When he saw me, he started jogging, which seemed odd at that hour. I hope he's one of you and not some muscle-bound burglar." I smiled. He said, "Knew it. I'm pretty impressed with how you guys are sticking with it. How long's it been? Weeks." "Exactly." "Kudos. Where I'm from, good luck getting follow-up."
"Where's that?"
"South side of Chicago."
"Professor?"
"It's that obvious? You don't look like a gangster."
He chuckled.
"South side's all thugs and academics. That's a little facile." "Actually, you're right. Actually, there's considerable spillover between thugs and academics."
I laughed and walked over to him. The macrame bag was filled with groceries. Packaged steak on top. Grass-fed, organic, whole foods. I held out my hand.
"Alex Delaware."
His grip was firm.
"Bart Tabachnik. I'm at the U for a semester teaching economics. I hope I'm not about to oversell something I observed. I really didn't think it was important. Still don't, but seeing you, I figured why not, seeing as it's still unsolved."
I said, "Anything you can offer would be appreciated."
"This was a couple of weeks before it happened," said Bart Tabachnik.
"Even so."
"Okay. I'm sure you know that the fellow who lives to the left is an artist named Bit. After the murder, people were murmuring about him. Apparently, they think he's odd. I've had no contact with him, but it made me curious, so I looked him up, and his work is pretty out there. Normally, I'd assume a clash of norms is at play. It's a pretty conservative neighborhood. I wouldn't want to get anyone in trouble. But then I saw his face, and I realized I'd seen him before. Only once, but it might be substantive. Then again, it might not."
He stroked his head.
"Sorry, I tend to get prolix. Occupational hazard. Get paid to lecture. Cut to the chase. Around a week after the murder, I saw Bid and another man having a confrontation. I wondered if that was Corvin. On the off chance, I don't know anyone here, but it was his house. Anyway, I looked him up, and it was Corvin."
Pausing.
"If he's already told you about it, I have nothing to add."
"No idea Corvin was dead. It takes a village to breed gossip. The residents of Avada appear to relate on the emotional level of cans on a pantry shelf." I said, "What did you see?"
"I'd have to term it an encounter between Bit and Corvin. I won't call it an exchange because Corvin was doing all the talking. Quite a bit of talking. His body language seemed somewhat assertive."
He demonstrated by leaning forward. I said, "How did Mr. Bit react?"
"Not at all. He just stood there. I felt there might be tension brewing, though I had no overt indication of that. But living on the South Side, you develop a feel for that. I felt as though something might occur."
"Physical violence."
"It struck me as a possibility. I didn't want any part of that, so I went inside, put my things away, returned to my front window. Whatever had begun was over. Corvin was walking back toward his house, and Bit had crossed the street and was headed in the opposite direction. I came out to smoke a cigar. My landlord won't allow it in the house. And the woman who lives right there," pointing to the left, "came out and asked if I'd seen the fuss. I said I had. She called them a couple of stupid little boys,
went on a rant about paying huge property taxes to live in a nice neighborhood and still having to deal with stupidity. He smiled. She's a bit of a crank. I said, name? Don't know. If you're going to speak to her, please keep me out of it. You bet. Bit and Corvin live at the other end of the block, but they took their issues here. I did wonder about that, said Bart to Batchnik. Perhaps they were out walking, encountered each other, and some sort of prior issue rose. As to what that might be, sorry, no idea. Appreciate the input, Professor. Anything else you'd like to tell me? Nope. And please, keep my name out of everything. My interest is in spotting microtrends. I tend to be more observant than most. But I really don't want anyone in my face. Of course. Lifting his shopping bag, he trotted to his front door, turned toward me, fist-bumped air, and went inside. He hadn't taken a single look at my badge. Chapter 30. Nothing like the neighborhood crank when you wanted details. The mat in front of the house adjoining Tabachnik's said, "Not buying what you're selling." No answer to my knocks or the doorbell. I returned to the Seville, called Milo's office phone, relayed Tabachnik's account. He said, "The guy made Mo last night. Damn. An encounter, huh?" "It doesn't sound friendly," I said. "So the mutual interest in chocolate may not mean camaraderie." "Okay, good to know. I was going to call you. Mo spotted Chelsea doing one of her night moves at 1 a.m. She slipped through that joke of a gate, meaning she left through the rear door. She headed straight for Bit's place, lit up a cigarette, looked up at Bit's window, and went back home. Bit's lights were out, so maybe she didn't want to wake him. Or I'm dead wrong about something creepy going on. She just wants to sneak a smoke. The other bit of nothing is no prints or DNA on the phone I lifted at the A-frame, and the unidentified one from the motel is too incomplete to analyze. A car drove past me. Older, gunmetal, gray Mercedes diesel. An intent, white-haired woman scowling and crawling forward, two hands clenching the wheel. She turned into the driveway bordering Tabachnik's. I said, "Call you back," and watched as the car lurched to a squeaking stop, bucked, and repeated that staccato performance several times. The white-haired woman, tiny, thin, ponytailed, dressed in black knit pants and top and black flats, walked around to the passenger side. Opening the door with effort, she extricated a black purse, positioned the strap on a narrow shoulder. Next came a paper shopping bag, Gelson's, that she placed on the ground. It took two attempts to shut the Merc's heavy door. She manually locked the car on both sides, retrieved the bag, and held it in two hands as she approached the front door. I was a Boy Scout as a kid, have that impulse to help, but the hostile doormat killed any idea of chivalry. I waited until she'd managed to bring her groceries inside and shut her front door. The deadbolt snicked. I gave her additional time to settle before ringing the bell. A raspy voice said, "Who is it?"
"Police."
"Prove it!" I unclipped my badge and held it up to the peephole.
"Huh,"
said the voice. Nothing happened for a few moments, and I wondered if she was calling the station. Without Milo pre-notified, that could complicate matters. But the door opened, and she stared at me, then the badge.
"Let me see that."
One of the few. I handed it over. She squinted. Maybe farsightedness would save me.
"You're a good-looking guy. This does nothing for you. PhD? What kind of police is that?"
"I'm a psychologist who works with the police."
"Have a niece who's a psychologist. She's also a tattooed lunatic."
Giving me the once-over.
"What can I do for you? I guess it's doctor."
We're doing some follow-up on the incident at the Corvin house.
That's their name, huh?
She snorted.
The incident? Just come out and say it. A lunatic sliced someone up and left body parts in their house.
That's another way to put it, I said, smiling. She didn't reciprocate.
Don't soft pedal for my sake. I was an emergency room nurse for 30 years. Before that, I was in the military.
A bony hand shot out.
Edna San Felipe.
She squeezed hard, flung my hand away like a used tissue.
Know anything about hospitals?
Strange question. Used to work at Western Peds.
The kids' hospital,
said Edna San Felipe.
Even so, the name Horatio San Felipe ring a bell?
Sorry, no.
My brother was the greatest heart surgeon who ever lived. Pig valve substitution for the mnemonic he figured out how to repair with minimal invasion. Our father was U.S. ambassador to Honduras. Our grandfather and great-grandfather grew more bananas than Dole.
She shook her head.
No one learns history anymore. So what can I do for you, doctor?
Making my degree sound like a correspondence course joke. If there's anything you want to tell me about the murder.
A stranger's corpse ends up in someone's house? That's not random. How'd it get there? Why them? It's still not solved. They have to be hiding something.
Is there something about them?
No, I'm just being logical.
Do you have any impressions of them?
So I'm right,
she said. At this point.
No, I haven't any impressions, she said. Never had dealings with them, except once in a while I'd see him, the husband, and he'd try to chit-chat. He's an oily type, pretending we know each other when we don't, like a politician.
Any contact with Mrs. Corvin?
She's a typical one, said Edna San Felipe. The tinted hair, the clothes, the manicure.
Displaying her own nails, blunt and unpolished.
The ER, you're elbow deep in someone's bowels. You don't fool around with talons.
One of my friends is an ER surgeon.
Where?
Cedars. Dr. Richard Silverman.
What does he patch?
He's a trauma surgeon.
Bet his nails are short.
She began to close the door. I said, so there's nothing about the Corvins you can...
The wife works, I'll give her that. I know that because I see her load the kids in the morning, and she doesn't come back until late afternoon when she brings them home. Now, those are a couple of...
Finally, at a loss for words. The kids.
The boy looks to me like a potential reprobate,
said Edna San Felipe.
One day I heard my garbage cans clunk to the ground, and when I went out to check, that one was skateboarding up the block.
Did you complain?
What good would that do? There's no discipline anymore.
She smiled crookedly.
What I did do was line the lid of my cans with habanero paste. That's a chili pepper able to blow a hole in your colon. If the brat tried it again and touched his face, he'd learn.
She held my gaze.
You think that's child abuse? I call it education. Same for someone's dog nosing around. Habanero the grass. Let the mutt learn by experience. And don't worry about risk to the garbage men. They've got these automatic trucks. Sit on their keisters and use a power hoist.
She folded her arms across a scrawny chest, daring me to argue. When I didn't, she said,
Then there's the girl. There's obviously something wrong there. Is she retarded or autistic? It's one or the other, that blank look in her eyes. She walks around at night. I've come home late from my place at the beach, seen her. At night, late. Where's the parental supervision?
The door swung a few inches wider.
The police have no idea, so they called you in to psychoanalyze?
Something like that, I said. I'd like to ask about another of your neighbors.
No one's a neighbor here, said Edna San Felipe. We co-reside, but there's no socializing. It wasn't that way in Honduras. Our workers were happy as clams to be picking bananas. Everyone socialized from all levels of the social ladder.
Who? I said, Trevor bit.
That one was my first thought when I heard about it.
Why's that?
Basic logic. Something bizarre happens, look for a bizarre person.
Have you had dealings with him?
None whatsoever. But he's also not normal, no question about it.
A person on the block witnessed what might have been an argument between Mr. Bitt and Mr. Corvin. She glanced at Tabachnik's house.
He sent you to me?
No, ma'am.
I happened to see it. I don't rubberneck, unlike him. What do those people call snoopers? Yentas. Like the Streisand movie. Love her voice, but never bought her as a man.
What can you tell me about the encounter between Bitt and Corvin?
I saw two grown men acting like children in a playground.
Aggressive.
Facing off, said Edna San Felipe. Like brats.
Any idea what the conflict was about?
Not a clue.
Professor Tabachnik said Mr. Corvin was doing all the talking.
He was.
And Mr. Bitt just stood there.
Like the Sphinx, she said. He wasn't happy, that was obvious from what you people call body language. I'd take a long, hard look at him. Like I said, not random, and the man's clearly unhinged. Slouches around looking like a robot, pretends not to hear when you say hello, which I did just once, believe me.
I said, at least he didn't kick your cans over. She glared at me. If faces were tools, hers was a filleting knife.
That's supposed to be a joke?
The door closed. A crank, but her instincts were good. Nothing random about the body dump. Focus on the unusual neighbor. Now that I knew about Bitt absorbing Chet Corvin's anger, he deserved further observation. Chapter 31 Evada Lane, 1 a.m. A starless sky sagged like a rain-soaked tarp. A malnourished moon cast anemic light. The first time I'd been here after dark, LEDs on poles and flashing bars atop cruisers had turned the cul-de-sac into a miniature theater district. No show tonight. The silence was constricted. That of a gagged victim. I parked a block farther than this afternoon, wanting to avoid some antsy resident's memory jog. My sneakers had the squeak long run out of them. My sweatpants and shirt were black. I could be taken for a burglar. If Mo Reed or Sean Binchy was on watch, he'd figure it out. No sign of either detective as I made my way. Maybe because they were pros. Or the overtime budget had run out. As my eyes adjusted, contours of rooftops suggested themselves. Where the street wasn't as inky as my clothing, specks of purple and lilac showed like pinprick wounds. Lights on in front of Bart Tabachnik's house, but his car was gone. If I was a burglar, I'd be interested. Illumination appeared at only three other residences. One of them, Trevor Bitt's tutor, where a single second-story window facing the street formed a flesh-colored rectangle. Lights off at the Corvins. I wondered how the kids were doing. I covered a third of the block, feeling like a prowler. Made my way halfway up with still no sign of either young D. The trunks of street trees were too thin to provide cover, and I saw no obvious hiding spots unless you got uncomfortably close to houses. Not on watch. I kept going, planning to reach the end of the cul-de-sac, circle back, and repeat before returning home and hoping for sleep. A sound from up the block froze me mid-step. Sound duo. A thump, then a click. I shifted off the sidewalk onto someone's drought-scratchy lawn, squinted and focused on the origin of the noise. Purple specks helped me, strobing movement from the side of the Corvin house. The barest suggestion of human form emerged before flicking out of sight. I trotted closer. The form headed toward Bitt's house, stopped below Bitt's street window. Chelsea Corvin, slightly stooped, standing there. She did something with her arms. A yellow tongue flicked, an orange dot appeared, and the flame turned into sprinkles of earthbound stars plummeting to the ground. A lit match flung to the ground. A cigarette end brightened under the force of a long inhalation. Chelsea smoked it dead, tossed the butt away, let it burn itself out, and did nothing for a while. Then she moved, heading for the side of Bitt's house that bordered hers. I race-walked, stopped two houses away. The scrape of feet shuffling on cement. She coughed. A signal? Or tobacco having its way with young lungs? She'd done this before. For all any of us knew, Bitt had no idea she preferred his property for surreptitious teenage rebellion. Most likely, she'd sneak back home. Two more coughs that sounded intentional. Then, faint, drum-like rapping. Shave and a haircut, 6 bits. A squeal as hinges rotated.
"You're here,"
said a man's voice.
"Good."
Squeal, hiss, clap as the door closed. I waited a few seconds before sneaking over. The cigarette butt had landed near a patch of agave, losing the battle of survival to night-dewed succulents. Bitt's street window went dark. Another rectangle on the side of the house lit up as if in compensation. A window that faced the Corvin house. Chelsea's bedroom. I hung around for a while, and when the girl didn't exit, I got out of there. Waiting until I'd passed Bart Tabachnik's house before making the call. Milo's semi-awake voice was a spit-clogged tuba. He recovered fast. All those years of late-night homicide calls.
"Hold on, let me go to another room."
Moments later, he was back, a saliva-free trombone.
"We surveil, get zilch, you show up once. Keeping a lottery ticket in a safe place?"
"Beginner's luck," I said. "I didn't spot Mo or Sean."
"Mo just picked up his own murder, and Sean started excavating a cold case. So she definitely went inside."
"No doubt."
"I knew we were right. He's a creep."
"Okay. What now?"
Muffled yawn.
"Raiding the place just because she's in there is a bad idea. By the time I make arrangements, she'll probably be gone. And too many unpredictables. But this should be enough for a warrant. Gotta be. I'll talk to Nguyen, or go straight to find a damn judge. Only glitch I can see is your presence. You might need to be named as a police sub-agent or something along those lines."
He laughed.
"You'll get paid sooner."
I said, "I'm fine with that, but there's another issue. As a psychologist, I'm obligated to report suspected child abuse."
"Defined how?"
"That's the problem," I said. "There are no clear definitions of suspected. The rules change all the time, and whenever I try to get clarification from the state board, they give me gobbledygook. If you move quickly, I can make the call at the same time, and I think Felice should know right away. She'll get upset, might be able to open Chelsea up."
"Complications," he said. "But on balance, you've made my life simpler."
Chapter 32. At 10 the following morning, I phoned Felice Corvin's work number. Her voicemail message said she'd be back in the office in the afternoon. I asked her to call me. She didn't. I tried again, same result. No answer at her personal cell or her landline. At 5:15, she phoned my service, and they passed me through.
"What is it, doctor?"
"I'd like to come by to talk to you."
"What about?"
"It's better discussed in person."
I don't understand.
I'll clarify when we meet.
This is... Is it something about Chet?
Related to Chet.
Related, she said. I just got in, Brett's basketball practice. You can't tell me what this is about?
I'd rather not.
Okay, come over within the next couple of hours, but I'll be cooking dinner.
She met me at the door, holding a dish towel, hair clipped loosely, wearing a green Lake Tahoe t-shirt, white yoga pants, and makeup that appeared fresh.
That was quick, she said. You're a motivated guy, Doctor.
I smiled. She stepped aside, eyes wary, led me to the kitchen. An empty KFC bucket sat on the center island, along with an uneaten biscuit, a container of coleslaw, paper napkins, and plastic utensils. No sign of the kids.
She said, Coffee? It's decaf. After three, I can't handle the real stuff.
Bouncing on her feet, lilt in her voice, the kind of tension that came from forced casualness. I said, Sure, thanks. Clearing the island, she poured two mugs, brought milk and sugar. Once I was settled, she sat to my left, positioned so she could avoid eye contact if she chose. Untying her hair, she let it swing and sipped.
You really do have me curious.
I said, The investigation into Chet's death has included surveillance of your street. Her eyebrows arched.
Even though it happened somewhere else?
The surveillance has produced some information that may or may not be related to either murder. Either way, I feel strongly that you need to know. My decision, not the police. As we both know, Chelsea leaves your house late at night. Last night, she left shortly after 1 a.m. and entered Trevor Bitt's house. I'm required to report suspected child abuse. I braced myself for shock, horror, anger. Felice Corvin shook her head as if I'd said something foolish and let out a shrill laugh.
Oh, boy!
She put her cup down, took a deep breath, faced away. First off, it's not child abuse because she's not a child. She'll be 18 soon. In a few days, as a matter of fact. Legally, she's still...
Oh, please. Really?
It doesn't bother you.
You've obviously convinced yourself something ugly is going on.
You disagree.
Oh, Lord!
She returned to the sink, yanked a drawer open, shut it.
I know you mean well, but this isn't going to help, Chelsea.
I said nothing. She returned to the island, this time facing me, but staying on her feet.
I have no doubt you're thinking,
she's a horrible mother. Tears formed in her eyes. I said, if there's something I should know.
Oh, there's something.
Scanning the room like a hungry animal scrounging for scraps, she settled on her purse and got it.
There's a whole lot of something.
Removing her cell phone, she punched a one-digit pre-program.
Hi. We've got a situation.
Glancing at me.
Can't. Needs to be now.
Yes, please. Sitting back down, she drank more coffee. A doorbell rang. Not from the front. The utility door leading from the backyard to the laundry room. Chelsea's exit route. The body drag route. Felice Corvin called out,
It's open!
A latch turned. Footsteps. A man trudged into the kitchen, shoes scuffing the floor. Tall and rangy, with a narrow, pallid face crisscrossed by wrinkles. White hair, precisely side-parted. His clothes bagged. His cheeks were twin hollows, wrinkles deepening toward the bottom as if dragged down by tiny fishhooks. Executive haircut. Executive at leisure clothes straight out of a cruise ship ad. Gray cashmere V-neck sweater, white polo shirt, razor-pressed khakis, oxblood penny loafers, each bearing a shiny copper image of Lincoln. Washed-out aqua eyes, flecked with brown, nested in flesh-colored crepe. No interest in me. He looked at Felice and spoke her name. His voice was a feeble croak. He looked ready to cry.
This is the psychologist I told you about.
The man looked at me, blinking convulsively, lips quivering. She pulled out a chair. He sat. She placed a hand on his shoulder. He trembled.
Dr. Delaware? Trevor Bitt.
No news there. Same face as on the internet. Older, wearier. I said, Alex Delaware. Bitt said,
psychologist. I've known a few.
Flexing his fingers. Spidery, graceful, restless digits. The nails elongated and filed smooth. Ink stains on the right thumbnail and the meat of the right hand. Felice had kept her hold on his shoulder. The ink-stained hand inched upward, was about to make contact with her fingers, when footsteps from the left made the three of us turn. Chelsea shuffled in, barefoot, holding a bowl in one hand, a spoon in the other. She wore a shapeless gray sweatshirt and jeans. Her eyes raced to Bit.
You're here.
The bowl tumbled from her hands, hit the floor, shattered. The spoon followed an instant later, bouncing and pinging. Trevor Bitt got up, retrieved the utensil.
Where's your broom?
Felice Corvin said,
I'll handle it, Trev.
Chelsea Corvin said,
I will, Daddy.
She ran to Bitt, threw both arms around his waist, rested her head on his chest.
Let me do it, he said. I don't want those pretty hands of yours cut.
I can do it, Daddy.
Bitt reached down and took her right hand.
Save them. You've got art to make.
Still hugging him, she said,
Let me at least get the broom.
Sure.
She let go, tottered, ran off and returned with a Swiffer that she handed to Bitt like a ceremonial sword. In her other hand, a dustpan. The two of them set about cleaning up, working in obvious harmony. Felice leaned close and whispered,
Now you know.
So we can move on, okay?
Trev, Chels, when you finish, why don't you go work on a project?
Chelsea turned to her mother, joy on her broad, pasty face. First time I'd seen that.
Really? She said. When it's still light?
If Trevor's okay with it.
More than okay, said Bitt.
He straightened with what looked like pain, held out the dustpan.
Where do I toss this?
Chapter 33. Father and daughter left in lockstep. A trudge duet. When the utility door closed, I said, This is the first time he's been inside your house. Felice Corvin nodded.
It was going to happen, eventually. I wasn't sure how to do it.
Wan smile.
Guess you took care of that. You didn't touch your coffee. I'm having more. What I'd really like is a double martini.
Go for it.
And make myself vulnerable? Don't think so, Doctor.
She walked to the coffee maker, took a long time to do a simple task, returned to the island, positioned so she'd have to face me.
Okay, here goes.
The flat of her hand landed on her left breast.
Okay. 19 years ago, I was living in the Bay Area, getting my master's at Cal, and I met Trevor at a party. I'd just ended a toxic relationship. A professor, don't ask.
The intellectual girlfriend Lanny Joseph had mentioned.
She played with her hair. Trevor was an underground celebrity, but I knew nothing about him or his art. I just thought he was a nice, quiet guy, which is exactly what I was looking for. Turned out he'd also ended a fling. Some stripper with a subterranean IQ.
Bit's uncharitable assessment of Myla Bernard. No doubt he'd sidestepped the incident with the gun. I waited.
Felice Corvin said, "That's it, basically. We started something. It lasted a year. It ended."
Basically is a favorite word of liars and evaders.
I said, "Go on." "Oh, Jesus."
She reclamped her hair.
"It ended with Trevor because I met Chet, and he swept me off my feet, okay? Trevor was handsome, but so was Chet in a different way. What I saw as super masculine back then, he had... was nothing like what you saw. Really, I've long thought of him as fruit that didn't ripen properly. I suppose we all change, but Chet really changed. When I met him, he was courtly, attentive. The proverbial sweep off the feet, nothing was good enough for me. I loved it."
Trevor hadn't provided that.
"Trevor was quiet and inoffensive. He needed his alone time, lots of it. After the professor, who was a total sociopath with insane mood swings, I was attracted to peace and quiet. But then it became... I'm not proud to say this, but I grew bored with Trevor, and meeting Chet intensified that. He was stimulating, gregarious. We laughed all the time, always had something to talk about. When I was with Trevor, there was a lot of silence. At first, I was content. But then I realized I was never joyful. After a while, I felt burdened, having to carry the ball socially."
"If you didn't talk, no one did."
She reached out as if to touch my hand, drew back, the downward eyes of a child caught in the act. "With Chet," she said, "I was the audience, could just sit back and be entertained. I loved that. Loved him for quite some time. Then..." "Enough, okay? You don't need to know about all our relationship garbage."
I said, "Did you see Chet and Trevor simultaneously?"
She stiffened. "Wow, someone's being brutally direct. Was I a two-timing slut?"
"Not my question."
I know, you're being logical. Yes, there was overlap. And during that overlap, something happened."
She touched her mug.
"Do I need to spell it out?"
"Pregnancy."
"Which I didn't realize for a while. I'd never been regular, and I didn't gain a lot of weight until my sixth month. By that time, doing something about it seemed... I just couldn't. I was terrified to tell Chet. He said, 'No problem, let's get married.'"
Chelsea was Trevor's, but Chet never knew.
"Did Trevor?"
Her cheeks flushed. The rest of her face followed, rosiness spreading beneath her neckline.
"I was with Chet by then. To you, it probably sounds cold-blooded, but I didn't want to hurt him."
Answering one question, no sense pushing.
"How did you learn Chelsea was Trevor's?" "I always suspected it," she said. "The timing. The blood typing proved it. Chelsea's AB blood, the same as me. Trevor's A, so he could be a contributor. I knew Trevor's type because we gave blood together. Some benefit in Berkeley for Africa or somewhere that I pushed him into."
Smile.
"Once upon a time, I was quite the idealist. When they typed me, I got treated like a big star. AB's rare. When the needle went into Trevor's arm, he nearly passed out.
Chet's type is
O positive. And no, he never had a clue. Medical details weren't his thing. When the kids were sick, he always managed to disappear. That was his approach to life in general. Anything that didn't fascinate him personally, he ignored."
Her fingernails wrapped her mug.
"Like Chelsea. The moment it became clear she was different,
He abandoned her emotionally. Brad, on the other hand, was his guy. Conventional, concrete, athletic. He was never mean to Chelsea. She was just a big zero to him. He'd talk a good case to outsiders, but there was nothing real emanating from him to her, and she knew it.
Did she talk about that?
Chelsea doesn't talk about anything, but it affected her. A mother can tell. That's why I got so angry when Chet made that call to you. All of a sudden, he's the concerned parent? Please! Have you figured it out now? His ulterior motive?
He suspected something inappropriate going on between Chelsea and Trevor, wanted to point me in that direction so I'd snoop around. She nodded.
It made me mad, but it also scared me.
His learning the truth.
At exactly the wrong time, Doctor. Eventually, we were going to get divorced, mutual decision. So far, the discussion had been civilized. But there are money issues, as I told you, most of it's mine. I didn't want him using that against me.
When did you start talking divorce?
A while back. A year, at least. We'd bring it up, agree, get busy, and forget about it. Our talks were always friendly. Splitting up was one of the few things Chet and I could cooperate on.
She burst into tears. No tissues in sight. I tore a paper towel from a roll on the counter and handed it to her.
Thanks, she said. Sorry for being mawkish, but I just remembered something. The things you think you've forgotten.
She sniffed, dabbed the corners of her eyes.
Don't know if you noticed, but one of the many obnoxious things Chet used to do was call me his bride.
I nodded.
I couldn't stand it. But one day when we were talking about the divorce, he got a look on his face. Troubled. What actually looked like a deep emotion, which for Chet was rare. He reached across the table and took my hand like he used to, massaging my knuckles gently. I used to love that. When he wanted to, he could unwind me. Then he said, "Guess you won't be my bride anymore." And his voice choked up.
More tears.
If he'd been like that all along...
Footsteps cut her off. Brett bounced into the kitchen, miming jump shots. Felice wiped away tear tracks. Not necessary. The boy's eyes were on the fridge.
Hungry, Bretty?
Quiver in her voice. No evidence Brett noticed.
He said, Chelsea had Ben and Jerry's. I want some. Go for it, honey. Get it myself? That would be nice, darling.
The boy grunted, flung the freezer door open, located a pint container and a soup spoon, and left.
My sensitive soul, said Felice Corvin. Maybe it's good to be like that. Maybe his life will be easier.
How's he doing with his dad gone?
Lately he seems to be moping, but for the most part he's okay.
Chelsea never reacted.
Now you understand.
When did she learn Trevor was her father?
Do we really need to get into that?
We do.
It's a new thing for her, Doctor. I told her the day after you and the lieutenant came to inform us about Chet. I acted quickly because she's not a typical girl. Yes, she's been going to Trevor's, but for art. A tutor-student thing. I didn't want to lose control of the situation, have her undergo some sort of breakdown.
You're sure she didn't already know?
I wasn't sure, so before I had a sit-down with Chelsea, I asked Trevor, and he swore to me he'd never said a thing. That was the deal we had. Pacing was up to me.
Your eventual goal was formalizing their relationship.
After the divorce, she said. Not in the sense of adoption or anything legal, just so Chelsea could feel a part of something. Being with Trevor has been terrific for her. They do art together. He tells her she's talented.
How long has she been going over to his house?
Since last fall,
and not often. And, yes, at night, because we'd needed to keep it under wraps. For another child, I'd worry about disrupting her school. But school's never been Chelsea's thing.
Trevor's been living here for years. Why just recently?
My decision, after I knew Chet and I would be breaking up. Chelsea's always been into drawing. I showed some of her work to Trevor, and he brightened up like I've never seen. So I went to Chelsea and told her Mr. Bitt wanted to see more. She'd go over when Chet was out of town, and we could be sure Brett wouldn't notice. He's a heavy sleeper, that helped. Trevor's just the opposite, total insomniac, so he was up late quite a bit.
Chet eventually found out.
A fluke, she said. A few months ago, he had some sort of virus. The guy was never sick. Used to talk about germs being terrified of invading the sacred temple that was his body.
She shook her head.
Anyway, he did catch something. Got up in the middle of the night to take a pill, heard the side door close, and went to check. And saw her. She didn't knock on Trevor's door, but she went to the side of Trevor's house and smoked a cigarette and came back. Maybe she sensed she was being watched, or maybe she just wanted to smoke. And, yes, I know it's a terrible habit, and no, I have no idea how she started, and yes, I've tried to talk to her. You choose your battles.
Her shoulders slumped. I said, "Does Trevor smoke?"
"Are you asking if he's a bad influence?" "No, doctor. He used to, but he hasn't for years."
So Chet spotted her.
"And got all worked up, and I convinced him it was no big deal. Kids do that. I thought I'd calmed him down, but turns out when he was home he kept an eye out, and he saw her go out again. Did he do the logical thing and tell me? No, he kept it to himself and did nothing. Which shows me he really didn't care. He never has cared about Chelsea. He just wanted to make trouble, so he called you."
A manipulation.
More like sabotage. I thought we'd kept our breakup civil, but it got me thinking. Maybe he was setting me up as a bad mom so he could get more money. I really don't know.
She'd just offered me plenty of motive for murder. Seemed unaware. I said, "Did Chet ever see Chelsea actually go into Trevor's house?"
"Thank God, no.
It was the smoking he concentrated on. Even he likes a cigar now and then."
"When did Chelsea start calling Trevor Daddy?" "What you just saw was the first time. I was as surprised as you."
Trevor didn't seem surprised.
"Trevor's different, Doctor. His reactions are different," she said.
The blanket explanation for Chelsea extended to her father.
I said, "How did he come to live next door?" "Oh, God," she said. "I feel like my whole life's being exposed. What the heck? That was my fault. Everything seems to be."
She used the crumpled towel to dab the corners of her eyes.
"After we moved here, I was at a low ebb. Boring neighborhood, boring job, the marriage thing, I was pretty down. I don't know what possessed me, but a year or so later, out of the clear blue, I phoned Trevor. Still had his number, still thought about him. He was happy to hear from me, told me he'd missed me. That got to me, Doctor. I kind of lost it and blurted out the Chelsea situation. One of those things you do, but you really don't understand."
"Sure," I said. "How'd Trevor react?"
"Different from what I expected. He said, 'Really? That's great.' I said, 'Trev, did you hear me?' He said, 'I'm a dad, and I never had to change diapers. Sounds like a good deal.' I was stunned. He thanked me for letting him know. Neither of us had more to say, so I hung up. I immediately decided I'd just made a huge mistake that could come back to bite me. But it didn't. I never heard from him. A couple years later, the house next door went up for sale."
Another poke with a towel.
It was on the market for a long time. Ugly pile of bricks, those crazy cactuses. Then one day, there was a sold sign. I see the real estate agent, and she tells me who my new neighbor is. I thought I'd have a stroke. She used the towel to wipe a clean corner of butcher block. I kept waiting to see him, dreading, but also...
Shrug.
One day, a truck was parked out front, but no sign of him. Weeks went on. I used to take a 2-mile run an hour after dinner, like clockwork, till I hurt my meniscus. One night, the kids were doing whatever, and Chet was on the road, as usual. I was running back, had slowed for my wind down, and saw him standing in front of his door. I nearly tripped and fell. My first reaction was anger. What the hell had he done? It felt so intrusive. And why hadn't he bothered to come over and talk about it? I asked him what the hell he was thinking. He said my call had changed his life. He was tired of San Francisco, and hearing from me had helped him put things in perspective.
About Chelsea.
That's what I took it to mean, and I made it clear he needed to keep his mouth shut. He swore he would. I could tell he was sincere. There's no duplicity in Trevor. What you see is what you get.
I said, how'd he locate the house?
He looked up my address on the internet and used real estate sites to find available properties nearby. When he found one right next door, he took it as a sign. A massive dose of karma, he called it. Seeing him unsettled me, but what could I do? I reiterated that he was forbidden from saying anything to Chelsea or anyone else. He'd screw up her life and mine, and I'd never forgive him. Again, he swore he wouldn't.
I said, how long has he been ill? Her eyes slid to the right, caromed back to me, drifted again.
What do you mean?
He moves like a sick man.
Does he, doctor?
She took a sip of coffee, muttered,
cold,
and pushed the mug away.
All right, no sense hiding reality. He's got a situation. No one in his family lives past 60. It's a heart thing. They get congestive failure, fade away. Trevor's 59, and he's doing okay, considering, but he's weakening. So he tries to take life easy. Money's not an issue for him. He's got plenty. Could have lived in a huge estate with an ocean view, but he chose here and has enriched Chelsea's life. How could I not honor that?
And now he can beef up his karma, I said.
Pardon?
With Chet gone, he's free to be Chelsea's father.
She stared at me. Are you saying what I think you are?
I kept silent.
She said, you are so wrong, Dr. Delaware. Trevor would never do anything like that, and I really don't want to continue this discussion. In fact, I'd like for you to leave right now.
No problem, I said. But Trevor's made himself a suspect, and that won't go away.
Ridiculous! What exactly has he done?
Lieutenant Sturgis has been trying to talk to him since Hargis Braun's body was dumped in your house. And he's been stonewalling.
Braun has nothing to do with Trevor. If it has to do with anyone, that would be Chet. It was his space that got invaded.
Who do you suspect?
I don't suspect anyone. All I'm saying is it could have to do with business. Chet's outside life, which I'm not privy to, and neither is Trevor. All the years I spent with Chet, and I'm a total ignoramus about what he did when he left home.
I said, with a homicide, a neighborhood canvass is part of the routine. Everyone else on the block cooperated. Trevor didn't.
I told you he's different. And he's sick. Needs to conserve his energy.
I didn't respond.
She said, you'd have to know Trevor to understand him.
That's the point, Felice. To know him, we'd have to spend time with him. He's prevented that, and the longer he holds out, the worse it looks. Especially now, with Chet murdered. Neighbors have seen Chet and Trevor in a confrontation. She seemed genuinely surprised.
About what?
We don't know yet, but Chelsea's paternity supplies a motive. Maybe Chet knew more than you thought.
I don't believe that. Even so, it's not relevant. Trevor would never hurt anyone.
I said, maybe the confrontation was based on chocolate. Her eyes rounded. I said, two boxes, birthday and Christmas, heart-shaped. She gasped, pressed her hands to the side of her face, compressing her features. Her eyes clamped shut. When she spoke, I could barely hear her.
You know about that? Oh, my God.
We're talking two murders, Felice. The cops don't just sit around.
Okay, she said. Yes, that happened. Yes, it complicated things.
What happened?
Trevor was stupid. Giving her the candy was absolute idiocy on his part.
I never knew about the first box. Chelsea ate everything and hid it. But the second one, soon after Braun, she left right out on her desk, along with a drawing that he signed. A little deer, like Bambi.
Was the signature his name or Dad?
His name, the Dad part, never came out. I promise you, Chet had no clue. He just thought Trevor was being over-attentive. Even after I explained that I'd showed Chelsea's drawings to him and he thought she was talented, was just trying to encourage her with the candy.
I said, not the whole story. She gave a long, dreary headshake.
Chet was a glutton and a big treat stealer. Any of us would be eating something yummy, and he'd just come over and take some without asking. He thought it was hilarious. The kids hated it, and I wasn't too fond of it either. I told him over and over to respect their boundaries, but he just laughed and said he paid the bills. Everything was his. That's what happened with the chocolates. He walked past Chelsea's room, noticed the box, came over to steal, and saw the drawing.
Her right fist punched her left palm.
Everything hit the fan. Chet told me I was a gullible idiot. Trevor was probably a pervert. You don't give expensive gifts to a kid without ulterior motives. He began interrogating Chelsea. She shut him out totally, wouldn't say a word. That made him mad, and he began calling her names. Space cadet, moron, retarded. It was horrid. I'd never seen him that way. Brett came out in the hall. I shooed him away. Chet kept going on. Chelsea just sat there and continued to tune him up. I managed to drag Chet out of there. He had the box in his hands. I gave him my limited explanation. He looked me in the eye, removed each of the chocolates, and crushed it between his fingers before tossing it back in the box. Except for the last one. He grinned and said, "Chocolate mint, my favorite," and popped it in his mouth. Then he tossed the box in the trash. That night, Chelsea cried like I'd never heard her. I felt like crap because I hadn't been able to protect her, because nothing sick had happened, but I couldn't tell Chet the truth. Meanwhile, he's threatening to call the cops on Trevor, or better yet, to go next door and pound the crap out of Trevor. I begged him not to. Promised him Chelsea would cut off the relationship. I'd be more vigilant.
Another guilty eye drop.
That night I even had sex with Chet. Anything to calm him down. I thought I'd succeeded, but yesterday Trevor told me Chet had come over several times and pounded on his door. He was frightened and didn't answer. So you can see why when the cops... Anyway, Chet dropped it. That was Chet, short attention span, and it's not like he actually cared about Chelsea. He just wanted to be outraged.
A beat.
What do the neighbors claim they saw?
Chet in Trevor's face, talking. Trevor listening.
That's it? Thank God that ended it.
Not from Trevor's end, I said. Chelsea continued to visit him.
what I told you, Doctor, only on days when Chet was out of town, and not often. You know, I think your showing up was what sparked Chet's hostility. A psychologist he could use as a weapon against me.